Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from www.englishwithkirsty.com. Here I'll be sharing with you tips, information and other learning resources so that you can improve your business English. Everyone, and welcome back to the English with Kirsty podcast. And today we have another in the series to celebrate 10 years of English with Kirsty. And if you haven't listened to the others in this series, go back and listen to those too, because they're all about different ways in which we can learn. And so I think today there may be a little bit of crossover between the last one that we had, because last time we were looking at learning through events, and today we're looking at learning through community. So it's a slightly different focus on a very different conversation, because I have two different guests today, and we're going to talk about learning through community and specifically learning through the community that they've developed. So welcome, Kelsey and Nico. It's great to have you here on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having us. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, thanks for agreeing. So maybe let's start with you, Kelsey. Just tell people, I'm sure a lot of people in the translator space know who you are, but we also have other people who listen to the podcast. So what's your connection with languages? How did you get interested in other languages and working in the language field?
Oh, I mean, how far back are we going?
It doesn't have to be like a life story, but like, why, how did you become interested in some kind of role that involves languages?
Well, so I, when I was in junior high, we got the option to choose a language, in at least where I'm from, in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. We started being able to learn a second language at age 14, which is actually quite late, I think, anyway. But I just thought it would be the coolest thing to be able to speak French and to possibly live in France. So that then turned into me looking into going to university for languages. Didn't find anything in the US that wasn't like French literature or like setting you up to teach French. So I came to the UK. And I was looking at different programs and stuff. I knew that I really wanted to move to Norwich because I actually had some family friends there. And I saw that they had a translation media with French language course. So I thought, oh, you know, that's pretty practical application of my language skills. So I studied that. I lived abroad in France for a year in Nancy. And then in my final semester, I was approached by my head of school, who said that a local translation agency was looking for help with subtitling. And I had just taken a subtitling class that I got quite a good grade in. So I went in for some work experience, and as luck would have it, two full-time members of staff were just leaving. And my boss looked at me and said, "Do you know anyone who needs a job?" And I said, "Me." And then, you know, 8 years later, I say eight, almost, it's almost 9 years later, I'm still in the translation industry. I started out as a junior project manager, quickly made my way up to senior account manager, stayed at that boutique agency for 5 years, and then went freelance 4 years ago. So I have been doing that same exact thing ever since, all while, you know, still primarily in French, but I've never kind of lost that wonder for like studying other languages and stuff. So I've done a bit of German, I've done a bit of Russian and this, that, and, you know, every little bits that I can pick up.
Cool. So yeah, I think it's always good to be really curious, isn't it, to find languages that make sense for you or that get your attention, because not every language will. Just because you like one language doesn't mean you're going to like all of them. But if you find one that there's some kind of connection with, whether that's music or people or something that gets your attention, then it's really good to keep pursuing that and to keep learning. I think we should never stop learning.
Absolutely.
And Nico, I'm not really sure where the emphasis goes in your name. So first of all, how do you pronounce your name correctly?
Well, it's Aniko.
And even, okay.
In Hungarian, the stress is on the first syllable. Yeah, so the accents don't really mean any like stress or anything. It's just
Okay.
show the length of the vowel. Anyway.
It's interesting. I don't speak this language, so it's good to learn new things, as we just say about learning languages. So, Aniko, how was it with you? Have you got a similar story to Kelsey, or is yours different?
Similar in the sense that it's going back to my childhood. I remember my mom took me to some kind of English club when I was in kindergarten. And then at school when I was 8 or 9, I started learning German. So that was my first real language I learned at school. And during the years, I tried all kinds of different languages: Russian, Japanese, Danish, Irish Gaelic, and English. I started learning English because I was going to a music school. I wanted to be a musician, and there was a lesson, music in English. So I had to start learning English from scratch and learn all the musical terminology and all that kind of stuff. And then I realized that maybe I'm not the best musician, but I'm better with languages.
Okay. So nothing
So,
was wasted then. You
yeah.
learned that your interest is there in the languages. And did you keep, like, is German the main one that you kept with because it was the
Oh.
first one, or no, did you move on from there?
So at the moment I work with English. I did my undergraduate degree in English studies and was interested in theoretical linguistics, phonology mainly. And then yeah, I haven't really used German since university. Which is a shame because I feel like it's lost a bit.
It'll probably come back. In fact, I've got some networking sessions in German coming up, so maybe one or both of you would like to come to those. I've said it on the podcast now, so I have to do it. That's why it's a new project. But yeah, I think it'll still be in there somewhere in your head.
I'm sure I would understand it, yeah, but
So the two of you, where or how did you meet? Can you remember that? Or how did you two come across each other?
Yeah,
Do you
I
want
think
to, yeah?
I can make a start and then you can take over. So we met at Women Localizations UK chapter. We were working as a volunteer and we looked after the social media account of the chapter. So this is how we started working together and started talking about all kinds of things that are interesting for and important for freelancers. And I think we realized that we can work well together. And then we have some similar thoughts about freelancing and how the business side of things goes.
Yeah, I think we kind of, I don't know if we've gone like more than like 3 days without speaking to each other since we started working together at Women Localization
That's so
UK,
nice.
which is really nice. It was clear that we clicked really well, and I think that our styles of working really complement each other. And when it came time that I was leaving Women in Localization, we kind of knew that we didn't want to stop working together. And we were kind of in discussions of, the main thing that we kept kind of hearing in the industry was, how do I set my rates? That was like the biggest thing. How do I set my rates? What is considered like an exploitative rate, or what is considered a good rate, and everything like that. So that was where it really started of us like thinking, okay, what can we do with this? This is obviously a pain point for people. And then quickly ran into, lo there's lots of legislation out there about like price fixing and stuff like that, which we didn't want to touch with a 10-foot barge pole, right? So we kind of took a step back and thought about what is a kind of a secondary concern within the translation community, and I think a lot of freelancers more broadly as well. It's just that, having a kind of like supportive and safe space where your collective knowledge can kind of come together and support each other. You can learn something no matter how long you've been in the industry or how short you have. And then that's kind of how our community started to form around that, sort of harnessing the power of collective knowledge to improve the industry as a whole.
So that brings us nicely onto the topic for today, because we're talking about community and how you can learn through being in a community. But so I guess you had this idea for what you wanted to do, but how did you decide what your community would look like where it would be hosted, who would be there, what kind of things you would offer? Was that like a growing process that changed as the community evolved, or did you start with quite a clear idea about what this community should look like?
Well, we started with I think it was half a year of discussing things and brainstorming and trying to come up with the best way to create this community, how it would look like, what we could do to support members, how they can join. And in the end, we ended up deciding on Slack as our platform. And we also created a website with some free resources. So we both have, I think, Kelsey has 10 years of experience in the industry. I have nearly 15. So we were building on that experience to create the resources. And that's just one part of it. The other part of the learning is in the community where people discuss things. We have different channels for different topics. And people can ask questions, they can brainstorm, they can ask for advice if they are not sure what to do. So these kind of things. But what we had to have a lot of discussions before we launched. So when
Yeah. Sorry, I was just gonna say, I think those initial discussions between us, the reason that it took so long is because I think one, it was important that, we kind of got it right, or as right as we could, launching into something that neither of us had done before. Neither of us had created anything like this before. We'd been part of communities before, but this was kind of something different that, that we hadn't seen. But then also, kind of within that, we wanted to make sure that we were creating an environment that people were kind of going to not literally buy into, but like metaphorically buy into. Of, we wanted to make sure that we had that messaging and that kind of tone of voice right, that this is a supportive community. We're not here to put other people down. We're not here to belittle someone or judge someone or anything like that, because we have seen that a lot where, because someone isn't charging enough, they're ruining the industry or something like that, where it's actually, we're not against each other, we're all with each other. So making sure that we were striking that kind of chord with everybody in our messaging and throughout the entire process and, with their experience in the community as well, took a long time to think about and figure out and set up with everything, basically. Like it's part of every little bit that we've put into it and put into the launch.
So do you have like a behavior code of conduct, or is it that people that you show them how you want behavior to be within your community and then challenge anything that doesn't align with that? Is there like something people have to sign up to first, or?
So go on.
Sorry.
So I don't want to ask specific people because I think the best person, like you can decide, the questions are for anyone.
Honestly, we do everything like completely 50-50. Nothing goes out without both of us looking at it or both of us signing off on it. We're very, very equally divided on things. So it's really either of us are perfectly fine to answer any question, basically. But yeah, so we that was part of what we launched with. We put together some community guidelines, And they have grown. It's they're living. There is we often joke that we're surprised at how many ways people can find to break rules.
Absolutely, yes.
And just how many different like situations that are gray areas. I find that like at least half of the things that we end up moderating are gray areas, or challenge us to maybe think about how the rule affects people differently, or this that and the other thing. Obviously, we have rules for no discrimination of any type, all of that kind of stuff. We have rules against mentioning specific rates because we don't want to be, at the mercy of the legal system, or mentioning like reviews of clients and like that kind of stuff because we think that there are already spaces for those, and also we don't want to get charged with slander either.
Yeah, you have to be
Again,
careful.
legal things, but also a lot of times when people are naming clients, it's usually in a bad light, so that doesn't really foster like positive communication a lot of the time. We really didn't want to be like a blacklist group or anything like that. That was completely out. You also have to present yourself as a real person as well. Am I missing anything, Aniko? No.
Certified, but yeah, as the community grew, we also changed some of the, not changed, but clarified some of the rules, I would say, because there are lots of gray areas, and we just want to make sure that everyone feels welcome and everyone feels like that they can get something positive out of the group, out of the community, and they can not only learn new things, but also feel supported by other members and feel like they're not alone. Because freelancing can be quite lonely, especially for translators, when you're kind of just in your own little study and you have your own laptop and that's it.
Yeah, and I think that's why community is so important, especially as a freelancer. Like for I've been a freelancer since 2012. Okay, I'm not a translator, but I really got this wrong at the beginning. I was like, okay, I just didn't occur to me to look for other people doing the same thing. And I started looking for other people who were involved in language teaching, but I went to places where there were many people from schools which had nothing. Okay, there's the teaching side of it in common, but like they didn't have some of the challenges that I have as a freelancer, and I didn't have some of the stuff that they were dealing with as people working in a school. So then I realized the importance of actually going and finding other freelancers. For me, I think it's I tend up to be in places where it's not just people who are teaching because I'm doing a lot of projects within the language community now. So it kind of makes sense for me to talk to all kinds of people, but definitely the point about isolation, you can feel very alone, or that you're the only person with this problem, or maybe somebody else has the answer that you're looking for and they could easily give it to you rather than you spending like 10 hours looking for it on the internet. I don't know, sometimes it's just someone to celebrate the good days, or give you some kind words on the not so good days. What would you say are the biggest things that you've both learned through having this community? Because we're talking about learning through community, but what have you learned about yourselves or about the job or about the industry? Some of the things that you've learned.
Good question.
No.
So obviously the great thing is that we have the community there, so we can ask questions, so that there is the kind of the direct learning where there is a problem and it needs a solution and then it can help you with your future problems. So there is that kind of learning, but also that some of the issues I've experience, even if I don't post about it, someone else posts about it, and then I can realize that, oh, everyone is having the same issues. It's I'm not alone. We are, as we say, we are all in this together. And the other thing is that it's kind of nice to have something that is related to work in a sense that it is related to the language industry. And I'm a translator and I'm passionate about it and everything. and I want to do more within this space. And it's kind of like a creative outlet as well to be part of the team with Kelsey to come up with different things for our members. For example, we have the TTTs. They are little meetups that we have. And it's kind of like to do something different that is still related to work, but not work, if that makes sense.
It's
So
kind
it's
of
not real
social.
work. It's like a passion project.
So TTT is Team Translator
T, as in, yeah. So it's
T.
a
T.
yes.
Like grab a
So
cuppa and let's chat.
yeah,
That's cool. So these are online or these are face to face or
online. Yeah. So we have members all over the world. So I think it would be very difficult to organize an in-person event.
we won't
Honestly,
rule it out, but we'll
yeah.
we're it's not right now.
But yeah, that was going to be my next question about like what your members. So actually, we should maybe let Kelsey answer the question about what you've learned, and then I'll come back to that. Sorry, Kelsey, I didn't want to
No, that's
take the
totally
chance
fine.
away, but you just give me lots of ideas. So what have you learned in the last couple of years, and then we'll move on to the members.
It's a really good question. I think one of the things that we've learned a lot, and we spoke about this at Elia, not this year, but the past year, and at Elia together, and we did a talk called "Building the Community That You Want to Be a Part of." So I think it's that, what's the phrase? Like, if you build it, they will come. Like that's honestly, we literally we built the community that I think we both felt that we were missing, and just hoping that some people would join us and also buy into that kind of vision and be looking for a space like that. And I think that we proved that. We got how many signups was it within the first 3 days? I think it was like 250 members within the first 3 days or something like
So
that.
cool.
Which was, we were totally blown away. We thought, it would be cool if we got 100 people all together from around the world. Like, what an amazing community that might be. And we're here, what, 2.5 years later, with we're getting ever nearer to 2,000 members, which is really, really cool.
Amazing.
So I think that's the first thing. Like, if you see a community that, or if you think that you need a space that's missing, whether that's in your professional life or your personal life, chances are that's missing for other people too. So there's that. I think that's one of the biggest takeaways, is that like you can you if you're feeling it, it's probably missing for other people. Another thing that I learned, I think, is and I'm a bit of an optimist anyway, but I think trying to see the best in people as well, especially we've built this supportive community and everything, but we still have to moderate it. We still have to make sure that the rules are followed, and that people feel, we don't want people, when we have to moderate someone, it's always like you feel bad because you don't want them to. A lot of times they just don't realize. So you have to kind of, it's very easy when someone breaks a rule when you've just sat down for dinner, and you can get frustrated and stuff like
Don't you know I'm having my
that.
dinner?
Yes, exactly. It's, that's the problem of a 24-hour community, right? So, it's very easy to kind of build up some resentment in that, but kind of just always remembering that we're all kind of here for the same reason. And most of the time, people are breaking rules without realizing, or without any sort of like malice or anything like that. They've just forgotten that they agreed to the community guidelines when they signed up, or they haven't read them in a while or something like that. So having that patience, even when it is tough sometimes, but it has gotten easier. And I think that's kind of the third thing, is that we, Aniko and I, are very much people that want to do everything ourselves and handle everything ourselves. We're very bad at giving up power. And I think, like, even though we're both like that, because we were thrown together to work together from the beginning, we were kind of cool with each other. But when the community started growing so quickly, we realized that we needed help, especially with the moderation. We're both based in the UK, so there was a whole other like time zone, like 12 hours that we weren't seeing, and we weren't able to moderate or anything like that. So fairly early on, we did put a call out for extra moderators, and we currently have three wonderful moderators, and we'll be onboarding some more as the community has grown soon. But being able to kind of relinquish that control and trust other people, especially with something that we've kind of built together, was a very good lesson for both of us, I think.
A hard one, I imagine, because I find that difficult too.
Yes,
But
exceedingly difficult.
yeah. But yeah, with a big international community, you need to sleep sometimes. So yes, I'm fine.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah. And Aniko, how did it come to the name that you chose? Was it hard to decide on a name, or was it clear from the beginning that's what you wanted to call it? Did you have lots of ideas, or?
Well, we did have lots of ideas, but we wanted to find something that did not only sound good, but kind of encapsulated what the community is about. So I don't even know how long we spent on coming up with the name. It was a long time. And I remember sitting, we had these, we still have weekly meetings. And even before we launched, we had regular meetings to talk about Film Translator, and we were sitting there brainstorming, writing different options. We had a list. So it was very much a long process.
A pages and pages and pages
Yeah.
long process. But yeah, Aniko's right. Like we wanted something to kind of give off that vibe of like, we're in this together, this is a supportive community. We did want it to be clear that it was for the translation community. And the bonus of having it be alliterative, I think, just kind of makes it a bit friendlier as well, which is always helpful. So yeah, we ended up on Team Translator after probably like weeks and weeks of deliberation.
Yeah, I think that's really nice because you've got this idea of like we're not competitors. We are like we're not actually working together. We are a team though, in that we are all, what am I saying, we for, because it's not me, but the people in the community are people who are working together, like on the same team, rather than working against each other.
I think
Yeah.
some translators might think that, oh, because I'm working in the same language combinations, we are competitors. But I think in the long run, we can only win if we learn from each other and we allow different collaborations to happen, even especially perhaps even like in the same language pairs, same specializations, because I don't think we are ever direct competitors, because we all do different things, we all work differently. But if we have that kind of connection with other people, you can exchange resources, language specific resources, ideas, even like more specific things, like how would this phrase be translated best, these kind of things. So if you just sit alone in a room and you kind of shut yourself away, you kind of miss out on this. Because we don't have any physical colleagues to sit next to us.
Yeah, so you've got different places for like within Slack, like an area to talk about work related, like how would you translate this? And there's another area what for more private things or for more general topics. Do you split it up into different forums within Slack, Kelsey?
Yeah. So we have, I think we're at 13 channels now, something like that. And they all are kind of broadly based around, like, because, it is a professional Slack community, right? We're all kind of based in the you don't necessarily have to be a translator, but you have to work within the translation profession, basically. So even though I'm primarily like a project and account manager, I still fit within this community. So we've got, I'm going to bring them up now because I can, because it's on my desktop. So we've got a kind of like general hello channel where people can come and introduce themselves and stuff like that. We also put our announcements in there. We've got how to run a business, which it can be like, hey, this, it's one of my clients is asking me about this bit in their contract. Like, is this a normal thing or is this weird? Like, has anybody else encountered this? And you can kind of like, share that knowledge, whether you've seen something like that as well. Or, someone's asking me for a new service. How would you calculate the price for that based on your pricing for another service, right? So that type of stuff. We have a job board. So anybody who outsources, or if you see any jobs posted on like LinkedIn or whatever, we put them all there. So, hopefully people can get some more work. We have Language Matters, which as Aniko mentioned, you can ask about like turns of phrases. It's very helpful, if you're trying to figure out something in your source language, and you need native speakers to kind of give you some feedback, like what does this actually mean? Very helpful for that. We've got learning CPD events, pretty self-explanatory. We've got marketing and sales, so help with portfolio, help with your LinkedIn profile, helped with, does anybody know a good graphic designer for my logo, something like that. We've got member offers, which are open to our partnerships. So we are starting to partner with companies who can then maybe offer discounts to software and tools that translators or translation professionals might use. Random, that's really just for memes, of which we do have quite a lot. We've got tools of the trade, so that's more of like software issues, but also like, what's the best ergonomic mouse or, that kind of stuff. We've got Team Translator IRL, or TTIRL. So if anybody's like, hey, I'm visiting Barcelona this weekend, is anybody around? You can organize meetups there. And then the two that are like a little bit less like work related, we have Let It Out and we have Winner's Circle. So those are also pretty self-explanatory. Let It Out is like when you just are feeling so frustrated, maybe you've had like a poor experience with a client or a job that looked great was supposed to go ahead, but you didn't win the pitch. Like those kinds of things. And then Winner's Circle is where you can come to say, you know what, I just onboarded another dream client and I'm super happy. Or, it's been 3 months since I started freelancing and I've already found, enough clients to pay my bills and stuff. Those types of things, because we really, again, having that community aspect, especially when you're a freelancer, is so important because those are the bits that you don't get to share with an office of coworkers. When you're sad, nobody else is sad, right? But if you're in an office, usually everyone's like, oh man, like I wish we had gotten that client or something like that. And equally, when you get a great client, you can be like, yeah, let's party, even go out for a drink or something like that afterwards, celebrate. But we don't have that as freelancers, so we have to celebrate ourselves a bit. So we provided a platform for people to kind of celebrate and commiserate with a community, and maybe, offer words of support or words of advice or in that kind of stuff.
And I think that's really important. I was just thinking as you were going through the list there, because I do have a number of listeners who are, or quite a lot of listeners who are translators. So if you don't know about this already, then it definitely sounds like something that it would be really good to join. But even for those who aren't, and I've got another group of people who are listeners who are freelancers, maybe not translators, but just this is the kind of thing that nobody warned you about. Nobody tells you, like you can. When you're starting out on your own as a freelancer, like there's stuff you need to learn about bookkeeping and taxes and marketing and stuff. But the more social aspect of it, nobody really talks about that until you're in the situation and you think, yeah, it would be nice to tell someone about this. Or maybe you tell friends, but if they're not in the same situation, they maybe don't understand why it's such a big deal or such a nightmare. And so I think. For everybody, whatever industry they're in, if you're in this kind of freelance work or situation, it's really important to find someone or a group of people to share these things with, because you can do it for them too, but it's just nice to have that support, isn't it? And to, because sometimes things, things are really bad, but they feel worse than they are, and someone can say, have you tried this? Or did you think, you just need somebody to give some advice, or sometimes just to say, yeah, that's rubbish. That's a really rubbish situation, but like being there with someone else makes it feel not quite so daunting, or that you're not quite so alone.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think like what you were saying about marketing or doing your finances and everything like that, that was a primary concern for us as well, because I've gone to uni for translation, but when I graduated, I didn't even know that like a per word price was standard, much less how to set it or figure out what was, anything like that. How to calculate it, anything like that. So those kind of more practical channels are really helpful, but then also having that real kind of community and supportive aspect for, validating your feelings, whether they're good or bad, is really important, I think, as well. And I think partially, when I'm having a bad day, I love when po someone posts in the winner's circle, because I'm like, oh, I might be having a bad day, but like it can get better. And I think it's a good kind of exercise sometimes. It's very easy, especially when you're isolated and maybe you go on LinkedIn and everyone's got these like highlights and stuff like that of like how good their business is doing. And if you're having a really rubbish day, then you might feel even worse. But because
Especially at the end of
everybody's
the
in on it.
month, right? When everyone,
Yes.
I don't do it really, but the kind of, which I can see the value in them, and I can see it's interesting to see what people are working on, but I sometimes it's like tidal wave of everything I achieved this month posts at the end of the month, and like, okay, if somebody wasn't having a great month, I'm not sure how they feel after reading that, but
Yeah,
yeah.
well, exactly that. It's a lot of times social media is kind of like a one-way communication. Obviously, you can comment, but like there is the kind of larger conversation, isn't there, that you're having. And people almost always only put their highlights on social media. It's just the nature of it, right? But when you're in this community, you can see so many people are going through it, and so many people are also succeeding. And a lot of times, those two people are the same people. We see so many times where somebody posts on, let it out at the beginning of the week because they've had a bad day. And then by the end of the week, they're posting on Winner's Circle because they've turned it around themselves, or with the support of the community, which is really lovely to see.
Yeah, I think maybe in a closed community, it you can afford to be a little bit more vulnerable. This is something that we were talking about in the episode about lock lunches, that maybe LinkedIn isn't the place where you want to post that you're having a really bad time with something, but if you can find a smaller group where you feel a bit more safe to open up about that, then whether that's with people you get to know through something like a lock lunch or through your community, then it's not the entire world can see this now. It's a bit more safety, I guess.
Absolutely. Or if you just want to, blow off steam about an annoying client, that's helpful too.
And then annoying client isn't going to see it because they're not a translator. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's what I wanted to say as well. You said Kirsty, but I was thinking that with LinkedIn and social media, obviously you're putting out content to impress potential clients. So you want to talk about like bad days or mistakes you made, or if you do it in a way that you spin it like it's all good in the end, it's always good. But with kind of these close communities where only peers are in, you can be kind of, you can be yourself on social media as well, but you can have like a more balanced interaction with people where you can share the bad things and the good things, and then you can see that we are all just people, human beings with better days and worse days, and it's not just the highlights. So
Yeah, you're not in sales mode, are you?
Having said that though, when I look at the, because I kind of switched, and I'm in the last year, maybe 2 years, I've been a lot more in the like translator, interpreter, language professional circles, and do find generally this corner of LinkedIn is a nicer place than some of the other corners of LinkedIn. It isn't just about, oh, I've just got a new job. I think it is nice to see some real people behind the profiles. I think that's I've even within LinkedIn, I see like a community, sense of community and helping each other out. And I notice you're both, I see both of your posts on LinkedIn. Is that outside of your community, is that the platform that you focus on in terms of making new connections or letting people know what you do, or do you have other platforms as well?
I Annika's looking at me because
Yes.
she knows that she knows I've got something to say. Well, yeah, LinkedIn for me completely changed the trajectory of my career. And specifically having a community and a network on LinkedIn and talking to people and forming those connections and also kind of creating content that felt relatable and felt like it spoke to people and wasn't just like shiny, polished, all the good things and none of the bad things and stuff like that. Obviously the primary motivation of being on LinkedIn is sales, but I try make that the byproduct and make communicating and relating with people and making those connections the first line of defense, not line of defense, but line of offense, I suppose. And I try to, if everything that you're writing on LinkedIn all your interactions on LinkedIn are kind of laced with that underlying sales message, I don't think it hits quite the same way. Whereas if you're just out there genuinely trying to connect with people, maybe share some advice, share your experiences and stuff, I think it's a lot more effective at not only connecting with people, but also just being a good sales tool.
Yeah, I think it's a massive turnoff if you're only talking about, sales and with some of the like polished messages. And I mean, I do really enjoy LinkedIn and I have a lot of contacts on there and meeting a lot of interesting people. Some of the functions I won't use though, like the drafting messages for you, because they just sound so soulless. I won't
Yes.
use them because that's not how you create connections. Like real connection comes from having real conversations. And if you can do that, then it's a really good place to be if you are prepared to be a real person and not just to try and post what you think is expected of you, because that just makes people click away, I think, faster than people realize. They're trying to do something that they think will bring good results, but actually it has the opposite effect. How has your experience been, Annika, with the LinkedIn? I mean, do you like spending time there? Do you feel that there's also a sense of community there?
Yes, so I kind of started using LinkedIn regularly when I went freelance. So even though I had a LinkedIn account when I was employed, I used to be a project manager at a boutique agency, just like Kelsey. And I didn't really use it. But then when I went freelance, first of all, as a tool to put myself out there, I started using LinkedIn. And also, I met so many colleagues through LinkedIn, heard about so many events, CPD events, conferences. I think I heard about women in localization through LinkedIn as well. So it is, yeah, there is that sense of community with colleagues, and maybe even with other people working in the industry who are not freelancers or not translators. But also it's a good place to find things that you can learn from. So it's not just the content that you read there that might be useful, but also things outside LinkedIn that you might not have heard about if you weren't there on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I'm always finding events there. I think it's a because sometimes like there's I don't find one place where all the cool events are. Like I've yet to find a website that's got all the stuff that I would be interested in attending. So I like to keep an eye out for what people are doing and what they're posting about. Or maybe if I'm too late for something, I'll see somebody posted that they went to it, and then I can see when the next one is. And yeah, that's really helped me both professionally and also in terms of learning, learning either something new or more about the industry in which a lot of my clients are working in. It's been really good for both networking and learning.
And I think there's something quite special as well, like when you are talking to somebody online for so long, or you see them around in LinkedIn, and then you both go to the same conference or both go to the same event, and you're like, look, you're it's such an odd feeling, and it's so nice because it's like you don't have to worry about going to these events alone, because we all do, a lot of the time, because we're freelancers, but you actually have so many friends there already when you've got that kind of strong network that you've built up before you went there.
Yeah, I had that just last week. So last week I went to Berlin and I met five people that I only knew online. And that was that, no, six. Six. And that was really cool in itself. But also, like, one of the days I went to my first in-person look lunch, but I went with somebody that I already knew. And it was, we spent the day together and that was really cool. And then meeting up with other people, some of whom I know really well. Like, we've talked about all kinds of stuff, but I'd never met them. And so actually going there for me was really nice because I have this, I guess community is different for everyone. I'm not part of your community, but I think we can all build our own communities around us and then find ones that fit for us as well. So if there's something that exists and works for you in terms of your role, then that is a way to join a community. But community is also like the people we build around ourselves from whom we can learn. And going back to the LinkedIn point, LinkedIn is a good way to kind of initiate some of that because it is a way you can find some relevant people. But for those
100%.
who are relevant for your community, I will add the link to the podcast. What is the best way for people to for translators specifically to find out or to join your community? Do they come to the website and then apply, or do they join Slack from there, or how does it work, Annika?
So we have a website with all the information of what you need to know before joining, and we have a form that is really straightforward. It takes like 1 minute to fill in, and then after this you will receive a Slack link to join us. And we recently started a LinkedIn page as well, so I think that's also useful to follow because we do share some resources, some things that are relevant to translators in general. But I would say, yeah, the website is the main point of contact before you can join Slack, and of course afterwards it's Slack. And we also have a newsletter. Let's not forget about
Okay.
the newsletter. We have a bi-weekly newsletter that also has all kinds of information. So yeah, these three things.
Okay, and I'll add your personal LinkedIn profile links to the page as well. And just as we're finishing up, is there for either of you, is there any advice or tips you would give to freelancers in general? In terms of community and learning through community, like is there anything you would like to say to them or encourage them to do?
So even like I would say many of us translators are not particularly extroverts, so we don't feel like we always have to be surrounded by people, but it's good to have a community still because we are still we still need some interaction. So either join an online community, either through your professional organization if you're a member of one, or through Team Translator, or look at local communities. There are so many communities that might be useful, again through the professional organizations. Or if you're interested in a certain topic, it might be that it's useful for you to, for example, join, if you're a marketing translator, join a marketing group. And that can be useful for learning. You can find people who work in the space where you kind of work adjacent to. And then you might even find some potential clients. So, and
Yeah,
my
you never know.
main idea of a community. But there might be some good extra outcomes as well.
So clients, friends as well? Would you say that you've made friends through the community?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feel like most of my friends are translators now. Honestly. But to add to that, I completely agree with everything that Aniko has said. But I would also add, like, don't be afraid to show up as yourself. Don't think that you need to be some kind of polished version of you, which is very easy, especially in like an online environment. I mean, like, don't, you know, start trauma dumping like the moment that you start talking to someone, of course. But don't feel like you need to be this kind of shiny, polished version of like your services or your business or anything like that. You're a freelancer, you are your business is you. And I often think that people kind of overlook themselves as their own like USPs, that the old phrase like people buy from people. At the end of the day, people make friends with people connect with people. They don't connect with your services, they don't connect with what you're selling or anything like that. So yeah, whenever you're going into these spaces, whether they're online or in person or anything like that, just try and be you. Try and present yourself as you and, your own personality and stuff. And guaranteed there'll be people who are ready to make friends and ready to support you and all that good stuff.
Yeah, the way you speak, the way you like to communicate, the other interests that add to part of who you are, even the things we were talking before we started recording, we were talking about sometimes you can get caught out by thinking everybody knows certain things about you or what you do. And if you're meeting new people all the time, there's a good chance that they don't. So, like, not just assuming, oh, everybody knows that, that's boring. Actually, that could be a good thing to write about or to share about, because we often do meet new people all the time, so they don't know the things about us that we assume everybody knows, and they could be really relevant, especially if they're related to the services that we offer or just the kind of, like, as soon as I find out, I was watching something, presentation, and somebody started talking about her dog, and I was like, okay, you've got my attention now. She's got a dog. She must be a no, but I love dogs, but that's not a work-related point, but there are things that connect us that have nothing to do with what we offer or what we are selling, or but they add that extra layer of relatability that people, okay, I can relate to that. I share that interest. And even if it doesn't lead to that person becoming a client, it can lead to a conversation. And sometimes the most interesting things to look about when you trace back where clients come from. Some of them have come from people that never became my clients, or some of the larger clients have come through a collaboration with a much smaller project, and then that person recommended me to someone else, and like you never know where it's going to go.
Absolutely.
But it all starts with community and talking to people and building relationships and all the good stuff, which if you are, I mean, I don't want to talk about being an introvert because I'm not one, but I don't like big groups. I don't like big crowded places. There's lots and lots of people. I'm much better one-to-one or in smaller groups. And I think something that's written can also help because it doesn't feel so noisy if it's like a Slack community or even on LinkedIn, but it's not lots of voices competing for your attention at the same time. You can take it a bit more slowly and not feel so overwhelmed. Okay, well, thank you both for your time today. It's been really good to find out a bit more about your community, and I'll add all the links and all the information on the show notes page. And So whether you want to join this community because you're a translator or because you're just interested in communities in general, it is a way that we can learn. We can learn so much from the people around us. So yeah, that is another form of learning. And hope everyone has a good week, and we'll be back with the next part of this series soon. Thank you. Thank
Thanks so much, Kirsty.
you. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.